Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Swinging a line drive, base hit right
field. Do you believe it, Howie Kendrick? Part two.
The celebration is on. The Washington Nationals are the world champions.
Hello and welcome into a We Are Not Using Our Normal Studio edition of the Nationals Talk Podcast, and you know why. Certainly, these are unprecedented times for us, for Major League Baseball, for the Washington Nationals. In today's episode, we are checking in on the latest situation of the 2020 season, actual Nats news as they release Hunter Strickland, and we will leave you with a snippet from our October coverage ending this episode that might bring you a smile. But first, Todd, you keep your personal life close to the vest. How are you staying busy while increased time at home these past few days?
One of the fun things about being a homeowner, Tim, is there's always something to do. So that's a very easy way to stay busy doing stuff around here, writing some stories as warranted and as possible, and then getting after some things I figured were going to be left on the table because I was supposed to be sitting in West Palm Beach starting tomorrow, but instead we'll be here. And as we heard today, we're all going to be here twiddling our thumbs, at least in regard to baseball, for quite some time.
Chase, I know you got actual real things to deal with. Your wife is due at any moment in time, but what have these past few days been like for you?
Yeah, my wife is 2 days past her due date, so we've got that situation going on, which is very interesting. It's almost like there's a ticking time bomb that you don't know when it's going to go off. But I've been passing the time, you know, writing a lot, and also, like I think everyone else, just watching TV and watching movies. And I've been watching this show called Last Man on Earth. It used to be on Fox. I loved it when it was on, but it was about, this sounds very morbid, but it was about a post-apocalyptic world after a virus. It's a comedy. Will Forte from SNL is in it. And I didn't realize it until watching it back that it takes place in 2020. And in the first episode, he's watching Castaway. So it's very, very surreal to watch now in hindsight.
Well, for me, I've been chilling at home on the couch. Is not much of an adjustment for me. So far, social distancing not been a too big a sacrifice for me personally. On the actual baseball news, on Sunday evening, the CDC came out with guidelines saying that for the next 8 weeks, which ran until early May, no gatherings of over 50 people. So that certainly put April 9th, April 10th of baseball returning in jeopardy. And then the president on Monday came out and recommended no gatherings of over 10, and the coronavirus could last until July or August, and you could see where this thing was going. And then baseball released on Monday, came out with announcements recognizing those 8 weeks that were laid out by the CDC. So we're looking now at the earliest that baseball could return is May 11th. If that were to happen, that pie in the sky moment, that would mean the first game for the Washington Nationals would be against Anthony Rendon in Anaheim. That sounds like Christmas come early if all that comes together right now. But Todd, as we don't want to speculate too much here because then we are leaving the depths of our areas of expertise. But when you hear now that baseball's pushed it back another month through May 10, where's your head on where you guess opening day is in 2020?
It's hard. And so this is the weirdest thing for me. And I'll try to explain this without making it sound like a gripe as opposed to it's just odd. Baseball being day after day after day after day, missing one day always feels like the equivalent of missing multiple days or a week in any other kind of scheduling setup, right? So that's why we always talk about, hey, is this guy going to get one day off? He's played, you know, 100 games in a row. And they get one day off and they're like, wow, that was a nice vacation. And that's how it feels. And when we were at spring training, you're like, okay, spring training has started and the season's starting early. Spring training's actually pretty short, relatively speaking, and we're getting there. And then there's the delay 2 weeks before the season is supposed to start. And then you start thinking about like early April, and that seems forever away. And now mid-May or beyond seems just astonishingly far away. That's not an opinion on what they did. It's just kind of that feeling that once you get going, once the winter is over and you get going and you start clicking day by day, kind of getting that rhythm, when you have these massive delays, it feels really, really strange. And to your point, Tim, it seemingly would be extremely optimistic for them to start on May 10th, or if you extrapolated 2 months from today and it was May 16th, and that means 45 games are already gone out of the season, you start to wonder about big picture things that Rob Manfred's going to have to handle when it comes to scheduling whenever they do start, if they ever do start.
And by the way, I should say, if they were to start May 11th, if that were to happen, they would be on the road. If we were to keep the same schedule, it'd be 3 games in Anaheim, 4 games in Arizona, off day, and then what would be Nationals opening day and the first game to give everyone the World Series rings would be on May 19th, the first of a 2-game series at home against the Seattle Mariners. Chase, I asked the same question to you that I asked Todd. What is your realistic / optimistic view on when opening day is going to be?
I mean, my optimistic view is sometime in mid-May, but I feel like realistically it's probably going to be a few weeks after that if I had to guess at this point. And it's, first of all, going to be amazing when baseball finally returns. I think none of us take it for granted when it's been missing for months, but now that it's going to be so delayed to start the season, that's really going to be crazy. Hopefully, it doesn't take too long for things to go back to normal, but it looks like it'll be a while.
Chase, I want to go down that rabbit hole for a second. You mentioned the first game back. By the way, my answer is June 1 is my optimistic date right now. This is how I felt after I heard the CDC guidelines on Sunday evening before Manfred pushed it back. But, Chase, you mentioned that first game back is going to be amazing. I think everyone, especially Nats fans, because there's going to be a little extra in the air with the World Series stuff, I think you're going to see people like crying in the stands first game back, just so happy to be at a baseball game together.
It's one of the best things in the world. I think all three of us would agree. It's one of our favorite things. It's entertainment at the end of the day. It pales in comparison to what's going on in the world right now. But when normalcy returns and we can do little things in life that we like watch baseball games, it's going to be great. And, I just don't see how they even do these things without fans, because, even when it was the 50 person limit for gatherings, you got two rosters of players.
It's 52,
it's 52. So you can get to that number very quickly. So I don't see how it's going to happen anytime soon. And if we're looking at the calendar, you're mentioning when things could start. I've already said on this podcast that I'm assuming that when things do start, they're not going to be able to make up games. It's just going to be too difficult with travel and everything. So assuming that they miss the first quarter plus of the season, you're talking about missing, just from baseball purposes, 2 series against the Marlins. Obviously, as we said last year, the division kind of goes through them in a way. You got to beat up on the Marlins to win the division and go to the playoffs. You'd miss both series against the Dodgers, who are arguably the most talented team in baseball, might be the favorite to win the World Series going in. You wouldn't play at the Mariners. You might not play at the Angels. Those are two very rare occurrences due to interleague play. And then you could also miss, Mike Trout, Anthony Rendon in those matchups. And you would also miss their 1 series at Wrigley. So you're talking about missing some of the most marquee series of the entire season for the Nationals if things go on this course right now.
Todd, before we head out and toss it to some of our snippets from Game 2 in L.A. that Chase mentioned, Nats might not play L.A. this year. Well, we're going to give you some of our postgame podcasts from the Game 2 victory on Friday night, the first of 3 in the division series. But can you give an update on Hunter Strickland? What led to his release? Were you surprised at all, et cetera?
I was not surprised. It was actually something when I was at the start of spring training, we kind of discussed amongst ourselves as reporters. He was giving up home runs left and right. They thought they were going to be able to fix him during the offseason. Obviously, he was injured for a portion of last year before he came to D.C. from Seattle. And then his final outing, he gave up another home run to a guy, no offense to him, nobody has heard of. He plays for Corpus Christi and hit 4 home runs last year in like 300 plate appearances. So that kind of, I think, was the death knell for him. He looked very much the same. He throws hard, but it's straight and over the plate, and that's not going to play at the major league level. So they were able to kind of cut their losses there. and be on the hook for a quarter of his $1.6 million salary as opposed to the whole thing had they waited. I'm not surprised. He's eminently replaceable if that's kind of the level he's pitching at now. So they get to move on and open up a 40-man spot. That's probably the most intriguing thing after this. Will they leave it for flexibility? Will they add somebody? You know, and maybe this bodes well for Javi Guerra in the end. We'll see. I mean, he's someone everybody in the clubhouse likes, especially the way he handled last year. And, you know, you need somebody to eat up innings at some point. He could be that guy.
Chase, can you think of what my favorite Hunter Strickland in DC moment is, if you know me well enough?
Hunter Strickland in DC moment. So this isn't the famous moment in San Francisco.
That ties into my favorite moment. But yes, you're referencing when he and Harper got into it, when Strickland was on the Giants and Harper was on the Nats. This is May of 2017. But what was my favorite moment of 2019?
Go ahead.
All right. It is September 24th, game two of a doubleheader. It ended up being the night that the Nats clinched a playoff berth during that week where they won 8 games in 7 days. It's 6-4 after six. In comes Hunter Strickland on the mound as the Nats are 9 outs away, and they also need the Cubs to lose in Pittsburgh. Up comes and pitch hits for the Philadelphia Phillies in Nationals Park to face Hunter Strickland wearing a W is Bryce Harper.
Here's the pitch. Fastball belted deep right. Forget about it. Harper has homered against Strickland. That went into the second deck. A pinch hit home run for Bryce Harper. Pulls the Phillies within a run. And Harper just hit an absolute missile into the second deck over the right field wall.
Who then homers off of him, almost identical to the home run he hit off of him in game one of the 2014 division series. It is the most ironic moment in Washington Nationals history. I defy you to come up with second place.
That was a good one.
I'm always going to associate that moment with Strickland and Harper, and we'll see if they ever have an at-bat against each other again.
One thing real quick to note on Hunter Strickland getting released is that there's an extra roster spot this year, and, you know, we've all kind of suggested that's probably going to go to a reliever, so the numbers in that regard should have helped him, but still he got cut.
Yeah, I mean, as Todd said, Todd laid out pretty clear as to why he won't be man number 26, whenever that is. Before we toss it to some of our podcasts, for game two victory in LA, where the Nats won 4-2, the first of three victories over the Dodgers. I want to remind you about our mailbag. Please write in to Todd. He's ready to answer all of your mailbag questions. www.nbcsports.com/Washington/Nationals mailbag. Again, one more time. www.nbcsports.com/Washington/Nationals mailbag. We already got one submission in already today. If we get enough, we'll give you a mailbag episode while we're all home here and just twiddling our thumbs waiting for baseball to get at it. Anything you guys got before I go? Anything you need off your chest?
Yeah, I need to take a poll. So for a long time, I've been putting off spending money on a PlayStation. Should I now A, stop doing that and purchase one, B, hold strong?
Include that in your mailbag submission or tweet at us. Chase, thinking about you, best of luck. I know you got so many things going on. Appreciate you taking out time to talk a little baseball.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys. And two quick things from me. One, speaking of the mailbag, and this, I was reminded of this a few episodes ago when Tim Shovers backpedaled on one of his famous opinions about the Lucas Giolito Adam Eaton trade. He backpedaled like Victor Robles chasing down a fly ball. He has changed his opinion on the Lucas Giolito Adam Eaton trade, and it made me think of this. We do this bit on the podcast, if you're a longtime listener, called the Nationals Talk Supreme Court Ruling. Well, while we have time to talk about things, if you want us to settle any age-old Nationals debates, like the Lucas Giolito Adam Eaton trade, let us know, and we can break the tie because we have three people. So get those out there. I'll also tweet this, and maybe we can make a segment out of it. And then lastly, I'm going to put this down and walk away slowly, okay, guys?
All right.
May 16th, we've talked about May 16th, that will be Luis Garcia's 20th birthday. Just food for thought, because he's been arguably their best player in spring training. I'm wondering if the season being pushed back changes the timeline for him a little bit.
I can't wait till we're talking about having actual conversations of should Luis Garcia be promoted or not, and that being the top story
they're coming.
On the podcast.
That's true.
I look forward to those days. all right, we're going to close on that note. Here you are, a few minutes from the Nats, 4-2 victory on Friday night, to bounce back and tie it up with the Dodgers, their second victory of October. Here is the three of us, Todd from the bowels of Dodger Stadium. We'll be back later this week, everyone. Appreciate listening. We'll talk to you soon.
3-2 pitch on the way. Half swing, fooled on the curve. In the dirt, he strikes out. Suzuki applies the tag, and the inning is over. Steven Strasburg with two strikeouts and a 1-2-3 bottom of the first inning.
So we head to the fourth inning. It's Nats 3, Dodgers nothing. Well, the Nats go down in order again in the fourth. Victor Robles tried to bunt his way on, doesn't work out. We head to the bottom of the fourth. Yet again, another 1-2-3 inning. So through four innings, Todd, Steven Strasburg, 47 pitches, six strikeouts, just 10 pitches in the fourth inning. And oh, by the way, Ryan Zimmerman made a nice play at first, digging a low throw out of the dirt. But Todd, I honestly threw four, and I know it's super early, it's super premature, but I was like, are we about to see the third ever postseason no-hitter in Major League Baseball history? Like, that's where I thought we were going with the way Strasburg was pitching.
I thought we were going to a Steven Strasburg has pitched seven perfect innings and Davey Martinez has taken him out of the game and Twitter crumbles and everyone freaks. And that's what I thought was happening because of the short rest. I didn't think he would ever get to the end, but I agree with your point, Tim, that, you know, he looked so sharp. You wondered if anyone was ever going to find a way to come up with a hit. Super interesting thing happened tonight when Strasburg was pitching. He threw 22 fastballs. He got just two swinging strikes on those. They averaged 94.5 miles an hour. So basically, he threw 22, basically 95-mile-an-hour fastballs and got only two swinging strikes. But he got five called strikes. And the reason he got those was because his changeup and curveball were so good. Heck, if he threw an actual fastball, it was locking up hitters and they were taking it. And we always hear about the reverse, right? Hitters are always looking for the fastball, always looking for the fastball. But this was the state of the Dodgers batters against Steven Strasburg tonight. They were so confused about what was coming, getting such bad reads that they were taking fastballs the few times that they showed up.
And there was so much movement on his fastball. It was diving in and out of the zone. So it was just fooling guys all night.
Pitching Ninja was having a field day with some of the Strasburg pitches.
Yeah, right.
That's a great Twitter account if you haven't had a chance to follow it.
Which, by the way, the best part about it is he can match the pitches so you see the release point and see how it could be a curveball or a changeup with the exact same arm angle.
Yeah, it's a great like way to follow the game along as well, a supplemental follow. In the fifth, Adam Eaton almost hits a homer. Anthony Rendon with a bloop hit. We're halfway through. It's still 3-0. And then, Chase, TBS shows up something rather interesting to begin the bottom of the fifth, and that is a man is sitting in the bullpen, and his name is Max Scherzer.
Yeah, and that kind of, I think, had all of us adding it all up, being like, well, you know, technically he could throw his bullpen side session. You could equate it to that. And him being in the bullpen was a sign because usually he's in the dugout, right?
Yeah, and so Strasburg still in the game, of course, has a nasty strikeout on Cody Bellinger. He's absolutely dominating the probable MVP. And then Will Smith breaks up the perfect game with two outs, so 4 2/3 innings. Dodger Stadium is on their feet for the first time all night, despite being down three runs. And Strasburg gets out of it with a nasty strikeout on Corey Seager. He's got 9 Ks through 5.
Here it comes on the way. Swing and a miss. He struck him out. Steven Strasburg with his 9th strikeout of the night.
And that was on the 9th pitch of that at bat. Like, Seager was battling, and he still went down with a strikeout.
He was battling. And Todd, you know, obviously the perfect game was broken up there, but I thought Strasburg's at bat against Bellinger was absolute dominance.
Yeah, and we saw some crazy swings from Cody Bellinger against Strasburg tonight, and in particular against a changeup where his front leg, his right leg, kind of came open and he got his foot down and then he just kind of buckled from there and chopped at a pitch and completely missed it. And this is an MVP candidate looking that bad and possibly the MVP winner. So, you know, it was just crazy what his stuff was doing. He was getting swings on stuff that was in the other batter's box because the reads were so bad.
Bellinger, by the way, you mentioned this, Tim, during the game, like, if this series doesn't go LA's way, it's going to be interesting to see how fans treat Bellinger because he hasn't been very good so far.
Oh, if the Dodgers podcast and sports radio in LA, it's going to be a rough 48 hours for Cody Bellinger until game three. He has not brought it so far in this series. We go to the sixth. Victor Robles gets a two out double, but the Nats can't score. They're still up 3-0. And it's clear that Clayton Kershaw is going to be done because he's going to get pinch hit for in the bottom of the sixth. And Chase, I sort of felt like between innings that despite leading by three, the Nats have missed opportunity only getting three runs off of Kershaw.
Absolutely. They got a lot of base runners in this game, and they ended up going 3-for-13 with runners in scoring position. So they were creating a lot of opportunities and, of course, pushed some runs across. So it was better than game one. But they could have blown this game out of the – they could have blown the doors off this game if they capitalized on more of them.
And now Max has the sign from Suzuki. Over the head he goes into the wide. The pitch on the way. Swing and a miss. Struck him out. He went to the cutter and ran it in on the left-handed hitter to strike him out. First strikeout, first out of the inning.
So we go now to the bottom of the eighth inning, and this is an inning that I think Nationals fans are going to remember for a long, long time, regardless of the outcome of this series. And that is Max Scherzer is pitching in the eighth inning out of the bullpen. Obviously, the first time he's pitching in relief in the playoffs for the Nats since game five of 2017. We've hit that inning over the head a million times so far, especially the last few weeks. But Max Scherzer, guys, was absolutely filthy. He strikes out Gavin Lux. He strikes out Taylor and has a filthy K of Peterson.
Scherzer over the head into the wind. And the pitch on the way. Swing and a miss. Struck him out with a cutter. And that retires the side. Max Scherzer out of the bullpen in the eighth inning. Strikes out the side.
14 pitches. And Todd, I just thought it was like the sharpest that Max Scherzer has looked since June.
Yeah, he had one really good September outing, but, and this was just a different beast, right? You know, he knew he was pitching one inning, so he's throwing 99 miles an hour, struck out the side. And one of the super interesting stats of the night was that the last time a Nationals pitcher struck out the side in order in the eighth inning was June 30th. And any guesses who did that?
I'm going to go with the multi Cy Young winner.
Yeah, it was Max Scherzer. It was not a reliever. So, you know, he was basically everything that we know about Max Scherzer, about how amped he gets, how live his stuff can be, how wound up he is. You know, it was on display tonight. And also kind of from a teammate perspective, right? This is a $210 million pitcher. This is a Hall of Fame bound pitcher. We've seen this with some other guys recently. No complaints, whatever you want me to do. This kind of percolated after batting practice. They talked about it further. Eventually, he was down in the bullpen. Some initial thought was that he was in the bullpen because the guys in the dugout had heard his chattering for 6 months, and enough was enough. So they just jettisoned him down somewhere else for someone else to deal with him. But obviously, he was down there for a purpose. And, you know, Sean Doolittle said, quote, it was electric to watch what Scherzer did on Friday night.
Chase, I want to ask you this. What was sort of your reaction when you saw that Max Scherzer was going to be pitching? And with that, I want you to answer this directly. I wrote this down in my notes. I said, Davey is done with his bullpen. And I meant that as anyone not named Sean Doolittle or Daniel Hudson. Like, almost like, all right, if I got to do three innings to get a win with the bullpen, I'm going to use those two guys and one of my starters. I'm done with the Rainey Rodney Strickland parade.
I think he found his setup guy, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I thought it was awesome. Anytime you're seeing like a top shelf starter come in to relief as a relief pitcher in the postseason, it's one of the most exciting things about playoff baseball. And I mean, the thing that struck me is that it worked out for this Nationals manager. It didn't work out for the last one. You know, how much better did this go than the last time Max Scherzer came out of the bullpen in a playoff game? And he was unbelievable. I mean, you know, it wasn't just the fastball that was hitting 98, 99. His slider was touching 91, 92. Like, he was amazing. And you know, I think it made sense once you started thinking about it, once you looked at the schedule and how this can kind of work as one of those bullpen side sessions. So if you're Dave Martinez, I don't know why you wouldn't go to him in this spot.
It's the kind of inning that in a few years Nats fans are going to reference back to. You know, the night that Max Scherzer came in and dominated in L.A.
And you know what it brought up on Twitter? I saw a lot of people saying this. I hadn't really thought about it. Is that, you know, John Smoltz was a closer later in his career. Could Max Scherzer, you know, fast forward a few years? Maybe that's something he does more often than not.
Two balls, two strikes. Turner leading off third. Muncy off second and Smith off first. Hudson sets the kick, the 2-2 pitch. Swing and a miss. He struck him out with a slider. And a curly W's in the books. The Nationals have tied this National League Division Series at a game apiece as Daniel Hudson walks a tightrope in the bottom of the ninth inning. And the game is over. The Nationals on the field to celebrate a victory. as they even the series here in Los Angeles.